Welcome to the podcast component of ArmageddonLetters.com, a virtual time machine back to the moment the world was nearly destroyed in late October 1962. You can also follow us on Twitter at ArmageddonTweet. I'm Jim Blight.
And I'm Janet Lang. The Cuban Missile Crisis happened a half a century ago, and it was our closest call to nuclear annihilation. The president of the U.S. at that time was John F. Kennedy. A very interesting person, a person whose actions and decisions during his presidency we've studied for over 25 years.
The villain in the script, so to speak, is the mythical JFK. The JFK that never really existed, never really resolved the Cuban Missile Crisis, but in the 25 years after his death, was seen by most people as historical truth rather than myth. There were a couple of reasons for this. One is the Camelot thing. JFK died tragically, some say heroically, but in any case, he was struck down by an assassin's bullet on November 22, 1963, within days of the one-year anniversary of the end of the Cuban Missile Crisis. It was natural at that point to glorify the president. Now, he doesn't need much glorification. He was a good president in terms of foreign policy, but we do need to go back and have a look at this myth. We need to look at this because that is the view that probably was put forth most explicitly in a movie called 13 Days, which is kind of how most laymen, I think, understand the Cuban Missile Crisis.
And it's not just laymen. I think it's even many people in policy circles. And it gets particularly dangerous when people who are involved in policy making try to learn lessons from history, which in general we think is a very good idea, but you better get the history right. So we think it's important to first of all flesh out the mythical JFK and then try to reconstruct what we call actual JFK.
Now, the mythical JFK, remember, this comes into play almost from the day he is shot, and it lasts for 25
years. Actually,
years.
I'd say it starts into play right after the missile crisis, because even during that year, it's seen as a great heroic manipulation of foreign policy.
And so, a great victory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's said to have kicked Khrushchev's butt. We'll just kind of run through a few of the key elements in mythical JFK. The headline here is that JFK was one hell of a poker player. The Cuban Missile Crisis was like stud poker. Sub-myth number one goes like this. Khrushchev, nasty man, sneaked missiles into Cuba, 90 miles south of Florida. Kennedy found them. Kennedy forced him to remove them. How did he force him to remove them? Because he basically threatened to go to higher levels of military escalation, and if you go all the way to the top, well, then you've just blown up the world. In other words, people who feel this way or have this view thought that Kennedy was a risk-taker, but a kind of interesting and cool risk-taker who was willing to risk more than Khrushchev was, and Khrushchev backed off. He hustled his stuff back to the Soviet Union with his tail between his legs, and that was basically what this was about. This was a great victory.
They also think, if we get back to this poker game, that basically Kennedy sort of had a better hand than Khrushchev. There he is with a 17-to-1 superiority of deliverable nuclear weapons, and in the area of Cuba, massive superiority in terms of conventional weapons, so no-brainer. There's JFK sitting at the poker table with, you know, four aces, and poor Khrushchev has a pair of deuces. So is it any wonder who won?
Kind of the other side of the myth is that Khrushchev didn't have his marbles lined up straight. I mean, the idea that he would have to know that if he tried to do something in Cuba, the United States of America basically surrounds Cuba, automatically ought to give you a little bit of caution.
Kennedy decides very early on to treat Castro and Cuba like lint. Basically, they don't matter. The focus is Khrushchev, and nothing of importance really happens on the island. Kennedy is also seen as just a clever president. He really sort of is a leader of the nuclear state, and he just manipulates the issue of risk so beautifully. And he is just a consummate practitioner of coercive diplomacy. Cool, calm Kennedy with a good hand plays it out, and the U.S. wins.
The people who made the Cuban Missile Crisis their own private domain after the death of Kennedy and throughout the first quarter century were heavily, heavily influenced by a man named Thomas C. Schelling. Schelling won the Nobel Prize in 2006 for economics. He was at Harvard for many years. He advised the Kennedy administration, as well as the Eisenhower and Johnson administrations. And Schelling worked out in great detail exactly how a leader ought to operate in the nuclear age, manipulating the risk, raising it when necessary, not getting too risky to risk it all, conveying the impression to the adversary, that would be the Russians, and in this case it would be Khrushchev, I am willing to go to the brink. I'm willing to look into the brink. I'm even willing to put one foot in the brink, and I bet you're not. And that's how we're going to get our way. That's how you operate in the nuclear age, because you can't really threaten the way you could in the old days to just blow them up, because they also have nuclear weapons. They may retaliate. And therefore, you really have to now win. You win this poker game by giving the appearance of being a riskier player than the other guy. And that is basically the interpretation that was put on this by, say, Graham Allison from the Harvard Kennedy School, one of our teachers, but many, many others. And I think this view worked its way into the governments that followed John F. Kennedy.
So under this mythical view, what you have then is Kennedy as the consummate crisis manager. Let's move now to actual JFK. He's actually not comfortable in terms of this notion of crisis management. He certainly knows he's in a crisis. He certainly needs to manage it. But, oh, God, this is so much more difficult. When you're in it and you don't know how it's going to come out, what you then become aware of is actually all the things you don't know. And so rather than the mythical JFK who's a hell of a poker player, we've got the actual JFK who is shocked, who's sobered, who gets scared in a very, very good and productive way because he is playing with fire, nuclear fire.
The way to connect the mythical JFK, one way to do it, with the actual JFK is that the mythical JFK is calm, cool, collected, and in control, and he calibrates his threats and his actions just with a fine tuning fork. But the actual JFK was not cool at all. And the reason he wasn't cool at all is because as you move through the crisis, he felt less and less like he was in charge of anything, that he understood anything, and that basically events are getting out of control. Stuff is happening. Planes are going over the wrong places. Planes are being shot at and late in the crisis, shot down. People are threatening each other. I mean, in a sense, Kennedy's attitude toward this during the crisis might be, what in the hell is going on here?
Now, it's important to know that there are advisors around Kennedy who have a very different view. Theirs is actually closer to that mythical person that we've constructed. That is, there are advisors that are telling him, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want. You have a 17-to-1 superiority in deliverable nuclear weapons. You have unbelievable superiority in conventional weapons. Do whatever you want to the island. Bomb it, attack it, whatever. Khrushchev won't be able to do anything. Kennedy thinks this is baloney because he's aware, quite reasonably, that one nuclear weapon that hits one part of the U.S. would be a tragedy beyond anything that's happened. So he basically, quite early in the crisis and in the discussions that he has, he is backing away from a military option. Now, I want to put that a little bit in perspective, that it's very clear, I think, to Kennedy that he does not want to get close to a nuclear brink. But from the work that we've done, this is not uncharacteristic of Kennedy. In many crises that weren't as serious as the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1961, Kennedy always really has the military option as a genuine last resort, and he never gets there. So this is basically keeping with his own sensibilities, but the nuclear aspect really, really reinforces it.
It's like being in a kind of a crazy house. He doesn't expect Khrushchev to put nuclear missiles into Cuba because he knows and his advisors know and everybody's telling him, well, that would be so stupid. because he has to know that politically I can't allow those weapons there, especially not after he's told me all this time that he's not going to do it. No, they'd have to come out. He'll have to pull them out and humiliate himself, or we'll have to bomb them. And that's going to be risky.
And Khrushchev has never done anything like this. Mm-mm. There's no other example of nuclear weapons being placed outside the Soviet Union. So Kennedy actually going into this crisis, I mean, he doesn't know he's going into this crisis, but early on, he's really convinced that Khrushchev won't do this. Then he's stunned
yeah.
because he does
he's
this.
He's offended, he's stunned, he's confused, perplexed. But this just keeps going like this because they put the quarantine line up, the Soviet ships keep coming, and I think he thought at that moment the odds were very high that the naval war will start imminently on the 24th of October. Well, it didn't. Khrushchev turned his ships around and went, not all of them, but most of them, and they went back to Russia.
All of them that had nuclear weapons.
Yeah, that's right. And so he didn't expect that either. Well, then things keep going like this. And then you get to the 26th and 27th. He gets two letters from Khrushchev. We deal with them at length in our book, The Armageddon Letters. He gets these two letters from Khrushchev. One's public, one's private. They don't seem compatible. Are there two Khrushchevs over there? Are there many Khrushchevs? Or is Khrushchev even in charge anymore? And before he can even figure this out, same day, October 27th, a U-2 is shot down over Cuba, and some of his advisors are shouting at him, "This is war. This is war. Khrushchev wants to go to war. Let's do it. Let's go bomb that place." Yet Kennedy is supposed to be in charge. He is in charge, but he is severely constricted here because the most important events in the crisis, he doesn't anticipate them. They shock him. And so, obviously, he doesn't know why they're happening. And now it's hard to respond rationally when you don't think the other guy or his actions appear particularly rational to you.
And remember, in real time, the stakes are huge. And Kennedy doesn't know that this is going to come out okay.
Yeah, very important.
I mean, right
point.
Now, we're looking back
yeah.
and we know, the world didn't blow up.
Right.
He doesn't know that.
No, he's trying to keep it from being blown up.
But yeah. all these other kinds of things are happening. So one of the things we want to emphasize in the actual JFK is that after there is a resolution to the crisis and after it works out that Kennedy, Khrushchev, and Castro have sort of, you might say, just enough statesmanship among them to work their way out of this and just enough luck also to get out of this, that after this happens, Kennedy is most certainly not feeling triumphant. He is damn happy to be out of it. He's obviously glad that a nuclear war and any military confrontation was avoided. And his notion, rather than bragging about how wonderful a coercive diplomat he was, his notion is, forget about crisis management. We have to think about crisis prevention. He doesn't ever want to get into this situation again. He doesn't ever want another leader in the world to get into this situation again.
We can't conclude any better than to quote his national security advisor, McGeorge Bundy, in the last sentence in Bundy's chapter on the missile crisis in a book called Danger and Survival. He says, "We must make it our business never to pass this way again." I think probably he's quoting his former president in that citation.
Be aware, mythical JFK is lurking out there. He's going to show up a lot.
Yeah.
Pay attention to actual JFK, what he did, how different his experience during the crisis was from that myth out there.
That's it for this podcast. Visit us regularly for more in the podcast series, as well as news about our new book, short films, graphic novels, and blogs. And don't forget to visit us at facebook.com/Armageddon Letters. I'm Jim Blight.
And I'm Janet Lang.